Can you hear me at the back? No.
Yeah.
Okay. Firstly, thanks very much to Lars for getting me the templates so I could hastily rebadge the talk from the last time I gave it. I've now joined Novell. So this is my first talk with the Novell template. Kind of looks okay, but I put the name in the wrong place, but I'm sure I'll get used to that. This is actually a follow-up talk to a talk that I gave, I think, 2 years ago at the CIFS conference in San Jose, which was actually at the time that Microsoft was rumbling that Longhorn was going to ship really, really, really soon, honest, and that it was going to have WinFS and, you know, everything was going to be search-based and CIFS would be deprecated. And so I titled that talk The Death of CIFS. And as you may know, that didn't happen. Longhorn didn't ship. Longhorn still hasn't shipped, although we are testing with it. And so WinFS got pulled out of the build, so there now appears to be no new advanced file system. And so I thought, I've had enough of being offensive. Apparently, I have been told that the Death of CIFS talk did ruffle some feathers at Microsoft because they don't turn up at the CIFS conference. But I finally got in touch with the person who was kind of upset by this, and I said, it was a joke. It was funny. I had pictures from Reanimator in there, you know. Anyway, so I'm going to send him a copy of this, which is the follow-up, which, as you can see, I had to give at the NFS conference. I mean, with a title like that, you've got to, really. So the idea is to talk about where CIFS is right now, Unix to Unix, where we might be taking it in future, and how much NFS sucks, although that will be kind of an aside. So, yeah, please ask questions. Please stick your hand up. Don't feel shy to ask questions. If you want to ask them in German, I'm sure somebody will translate it for me. So the first question is, why? Hey, isn't CIFS this Microsoft protocol, you know, XSMB? What are you doing messing with it? So, as I'm sure you may have noticed, CIFS is kind of the dominant file-sharing protocol going to the desktop. Although I gave this talk at LinuxConf Australia, and never make Windows jokes in a conference with Linux geeks, because to prove my point of how dominant CIFS was and how dominant Windows was, I asked the audience to say, okay, you know, is there anyone who works on a network that doesn't have Windows clients? And about 15 people put their hands up. So trying to be clever, I said, okay, well, where do you work? And the guy said, oh, I work at home. So, yeah, I was really asking for that. So I said the only thing you could say, which was, well, when you move out of your parents' basement and get a real job, then you'll find that everybody uses Windows. So, CIFS is, as you may know, somewhat dominant. And most departments really don't like supporting more than one thing. Having come from HP, they like supporting Windows. They really don't like it when you call them up and say, I have a problem with Linux, because their first request is, okay, well, turn on the application desktop sharing and let me take a look. No, you didn't hear what I said. I'm running Linux. So they don't really want to troubleshoot anything more than one system. And they certainly don't want to add new client code to Windows. I mean, unfortunately, bitter experience from many companies have learned that adding new code to Windows is a losing proposition. The only people who can add new code to Windows are Microsoft. You might have thought that application developers would have realized that, but hey, it'll take a little time. So, if we want Linux to be successful on the desktop, and personally I do, although I do know there are a few Mac fans, Mac OS X fans in the audience, it's got to live within a CIFS world, CIFS to the desktop. And so here's my prediction, and if I'm wrong next year, you can all throw rotten tomatoes or just laugh at me. But NFS, and you know, especially NFS v4, will have zero effect on the standard desktops. It may well become very popular as a back-end file system in data centers, but as for the regular user, no, it'll be no such file system because no one will have heard of it. So if you look at the marketplace, really, now that OS 2 is kind of being discontinued, we had a very interesting talk about that earlier on today. Linux and Mac OS 10 really are the only viable competitors on the desktop to Windows. So SIFS really isn't terribly friendly to Linux and Mac OS 10 clients. So what we're hoping to do is actually to create a set of SIFS extensions that make SIFS much more useful for Linux or Unix to Unix style clients, Mac OS 10 to Linux or whatever. And if we can standardize these, which we're trying to do, my hope is that we can get people like NetApp and EMC to adopt them. And that will then base it on their servers. So it's not just a Samba server only thing. And at that point, we'll gain some traction. And essentially, you know, we have some viable clients. We have a protocol that we at least have some hope of controlling. And so at that point, it can't be embraced and extended so easily. Now, I think EMC and NetApp, they know what we're doing, but they have their own commercial pressures, and so they're kind of ignoring it until we've really finished doing the standardization, and we have kind of a SIFS extensions 1.0 that really does everything that you need to do to host a Linux or Mac OS X client off a Samba server. And my goal for that, which we're actually very close to right now, and there are some issues that I'm going to talk about, my goal is that you should be able to do a diskless boot from a Linux system onto from a Samba server and have everything coming from there, your dev directory, you know, absolutely everything. And so the goal is, we'll know we've won if Microsoft start putting the SIFS extensions in, but I think I'll be making snowmen in a very hot place if that ever happens. So let's talk about where the original ideas of extending SIFS came from. And interestingly enough, it was IBM with OS 2 who first came up with the idea of extending SIFS, and they wrote up a really nice section of the XOpen spec talking about how to use SIFS with Unix passwords. And when I read this, I thought, I remember reading this a long time ago, back in about 1992 or 93. I remember thinking, wow, this is great. We can use it with Unix passwords. You know, and that was before, of course, I realized that no clients ever implemented this. It was kind of an experimental thing that was done at IBM. And then later on, much later, a company called Thursby, who did a Mac OS 9 SIFS client. I believe they also have a Mac OS 10 SIFS client, but Mac OS 10 ships with native SIFS. They actually added some new transcalls to cope with the resource forks and the desktop database that Mac OS uses. And so they basically looked in SIFS, which is a pretty big protocol, and found an area like 300 to 399 in the Transact 2 space and kind of said, yeah, we'll use that. And so they just kind of seemed to they just started adding code there. And because they knew they couldn't get Microsoft to support this stuff, they did the only thing possible, which was to donate their server-side changes to Samba so that they could get their customers to run Samba if they wanted to have the Mac-specific features. And I can't find any actual paper specifications or online specifications of that. The only record of it that I think we have are from some old patches in an old Samba contribution. And I think that might have been around Samba 1.0 or 2.0 time frame. And those extensions have gone. They're no longer in the current Samba code base. So the first real serious attempts at standardizing extensions to SIFS was actually done by the original non-insane SCO, the products company, not the lawsuits company. And these are the people who became Tarantella. And actually, they had a long discussion on the SIFS mailing list about what would be required to do SIFS Unix to Unix. And that was mainly led by Roger Binns, who was the author of Vision FS, which was a competitor to Samba that SCO used to sell. And HP was pretty keen on this. I mean, HP has always been very, very friendly with Microsoft, want to support Microsoft protocols. And so the HP UX people actually got kind of keen on this. and decided that they would help implement it and help specify it. Now, this was back in the time when Microsoft was being extremely cooperative and we had great access to Microsoft engineers. And so a real milestone was that they agreed. Now, I must find in my mail list the agreement, my mail archives, the actual agreement. This is one of those things where I kind of remember it happening, but if I don't actually find the email or piece of paper or whatever, it's probably not worth anything. But they did agree to carve out an extension space that could be used by Unix to Unix vendors for SIFTs, and they promised that they would not trample on that space either by accident or design. And this happened after one of the capability bits in the original Negotiate protocol was actually used, I think it's in Nagprot or Session Setup, was used for extended security. And so there was a collision there, and that's actually what made them agree to actually carve out that space for us. And I think it's in the area of hex 200 to 255. Anyway, it's later on in the talk. So Storage Network Industry Association started the process of standardizing SIFs, started with Paul Leach's internet draft, got some participation from Microsoft, IBM, EMC, NetApp, and the Samba team, and actually started to try and come up with a specification for SIFs. Unfortunately, by the time they finished, Microsoft had got difficult. I think this was in the middle of the lawsuits. And so Microsoft kind of insisted on stamping for non-commercial use only on the specification. So it's not actually a useful spec, even though many people have copies and look at it. So this specification, this SNIA spec for SIFs, actually did include the Unix extensions that had been decided on the mailing list. But the more useful area, the more useful document that specifies, and the one that's safe to read and use for, quotes, commercial purposes, was actually a Microsoft Word document that Mark Dave Jacobson at HP created. And so they created the patches for Samba 2.2, and we incorporated them in. But to be honest, we kind of just left them there. And you know how it is. Perfectly good code, if it's never executed, even if it's never changed, it somehow decays. It's a very strange thing, but you get bit rot in code. And things that used to work stop working, even though you've not actually touched that area of code. It's because you weren't keeping it up and testing it. I especially like Andrew's recent comment to me on this trip, which was, if it's not tested, it doesn't exist. And so I think that's definitely a watchword we should use going forward. So it actually got seriously maintained once Steve French at IBM, who unfortunately can't be with us today, he wrote a SIFS client for the Linux kernel. Now, Jim, do you know if he originally based it on SMBFS or did he do it from scratch? So it's completely written from scratch. Now Steve knows what he's doing when it comes to SIFs because he was the person who wrote the client redirector for OS 2. So he's got a lot of experience with SIFS clients. And so once he started putting that code in and actually testing it, we got very embarrassed because things weren't working. So... And finally, in the 2.6 kernel, the SIFS redirector client has been adopted as a replacement for SMBFS. So that's what we're actually testing against right now. So let me describe the current state of the SIFS extensions and what you can and can't do. And later on, I'll talk about where we're going to go with them. So as I said, it was Nagprot. The original intent was to create a Unix-to-Unix dialect of SIFS. Now, allowing a diskless Unix client to boot from a SIFS server. Now, HP was very interested in this for HPUX because they sell a NFS to SIFS gateway based on the Charity code base. Anyone here heard of Charity? Yeah, a few people. So they have rights to extend and maintain it. And so they added Unix extensions because they wanted HPUX workstations to be able to mount resources in Microsoft networks. And so the way it works is you detect the fact that there are even Unix extensions available by a bit, hex 8, whatever, in the Nagprot reply, and then that if that comes back, you know that you have a set of trans 2 calls between hex 200 and 2FF. Now, that's because trans 2 calls are open-ended, that's an area large enough to drive, you know, a tractor trailer through in terms of adding extensions. And so one of the things that I'm going to talk about later on is how far do we go with this? I know Andrew has one view, which I think we will get to eventually, but right now we're kind of taking smaller baby steps, even though we may end up rewriting it later. So the most obvious thing that we needed was a new info level for the get and set file info calls that essentially come back with the Unix-specific features. So there are things like, you know, device and inode number, hard links, POSIX owner, this kind of thing. So you can pull back all the information that you would normally get by doing ls-l or you would get from a stat call. And then the other things that were added was a couple of extension calls for creating symlinks. Now, this caused no end of trouble initially, because the problem with creating symlinks on a remote Samba server is that the Samba server isn't really aware of the fact that it's a symlink, because SIFS doesn't support symlinks. The rest of SIFS doesn't support symlinks. So imagine that you have a Samba server, you're sharing a part of the file system, and you're pretty confident that because you have no users on the Unix server, you know that nobody has any symlinks that go outside that area. So your Samba can quite safely follow all the path names in that directory hierarchy. And then an evil Linux SIFS client comes along and adds a POSIX symlink going to etc. password. And then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose because everyone can read etc. password, etc. The question was, do we restrict that? Do we try and interpret the contents of an incoming symlink? And there was a lot of very heated discussions about it. And eventually, as usual, Triget ended up being right. And what we decided to do was not to interpret the contents of a Unix symlink. And so, yes, you can create symlinks that go outside the file system, go outside the exported file system. And if you want to control that, you have to restrict wide links on a Samba server. And we can do that. There were some security issues with that code for a very long time. Now we're actually pretty secure. You can't go outside an exported directory hierarchy. But that was that was a rather heated and interesting discussion. So you can create... A call to create hard links was added. Now that can be done via the nt-rename call, but we didn't really understand that so well. Which was used within Windows for the POSIX subsystem. So they ended up adding their own call. But hey, it's SIFS, so having two ways to create a hard link is nothing compared to the numerous ways you have for opening a file. So, excuse me. So the problems with the original spec, which actually came when I really, really went in and tried to implement it and tighten it up, was that it was done by HPUX guys who assumed that all the world was HPUX. And so they just specified things like, you know, the Unix extensions, the Unix basic info would return number of blocks. Well, what does that mean? You know, number of blocks can mean one thing on one Unix and one thing on another. There is no standard for number of blocks. We ended up having an argument about this on the Linux kernel mailing list. And I think it's the only time I've actually been able to correct Linus, because he said it was always 512, and it turns out that's not true. So I actually went in and specified that, saying, okay, in the SIFS extensions, I don't care what your underlying block size is in the file system, you're always returning 512 byte blocks, etc. So it actually, we need to make some changes from the original specifications. So at that point, we realized that we needed some kind of change control mechanism, or at least a mechanism for telling a client what version of the SIFS extensions, Unix extensions, it was talking to. So the first thing a client now does is when it gets back the negprot reply that says, yes, I do SIFS extensions after it's logged on, is it makes a what is the extension version number call. And that gives it a number that tells it what sort of, you know, SIFS Unix level it's at. And the other thing it comes back is a 64-bit capabilities bit mask that allows the server to say, okay, I do file locks, but I won't do ACLs. And right now we haven't defined all of those, but we're busily filling them out. So it's essentially a set for future expansion. That's one of the new ops in the trans2 ops in the 255 200 to 255 space, sort of get SIFS version. So yes, I've already talked about this. So symlinks, as I say, are a problem. The interesting thing about this is that NFS clients don't suffer from this, because in NFS, the server never looks up symlinks. So you've never got a problem of a symlink being created on the server and then a Windows client coming in causing the symlink to be followed, because NFS always looks up the symlink, and the symlink is then interpreted on the client machine. So, you know, right now in with the SIFS extensions in Samba, if you've got it prohibiting going outside the directory tree, yes, a Unix client can create a symlink to etc. password, and if a Windows client tries to open that, it will get permission denied. But if the Unix client tries to open it, it will see it's a symlink and read its own local etc. password, which is exactly what you want. Now, another interesting thing is that Microsoft had to solve the same problem for services for Unix. So they wanted to be able to store symlinks that NFS clients might set. And the way they chose to do this actually is in extended attributes on the NTFS file system. And as far as I know, this is the only place in Windows that the extended attributes are actually used. That's the OS2 style extended attributes are actually used. Because once we got EA support in Samba, I was kind of interested, and I thought, well, I should write a Win32 test program to test these out. And it turned out there is no Win32 API call that can even get at the extended attributes. They simply don't exist in the Win32 space. Right now, we can't support full POSIX compliance because of the byte range locking semantics. So I think I've given a talk here before, if you hear about POSIX locking and how weird it is and how we map Windows locks are mapped into POSIX locks. So that's probably the biggest missing feature right now is locking. So what Steve's client does right now, I think, is it maps lock request into Windows locks. And the problem is the semantics aren't right, because Windows locks are mandatory. They can't be split or merged. You know, you can't, they're stackable, POSIX locks aren't. There's a whole difference in semantics. So I think if you were running off a Samba share right now doing the Unix extensions, occasionally applications would break because the locking semantics are wrong. So what we need to do is to add locking calls into Samba. So, and Steve has already spec'd these out on the wire. I just need to make the changes in the Samba code to do this. Now, all of this work, by the way, right now, is all going on in Samba 3. And this is because I've been extremely remiss. What I intend to do once I get back from the conference and get over the jet lag is to start putting these calls and tests, more importantly, torture tests for all these calls into Samba 4, so that we can basically ensure that both 3 and 4 have a completely compatible and identical implementation of all these custom-defined SIFS calls. So what we have to do is the Windows lock layer is 64-bit unsigned. The POSIX lock layer can be 32-bit or 64-bit signed. And has different semantics. So what I need to do right now, at least with the code in Samba 3, is to chisel those two layers apart and essentially allow the POSIX locks to come in as a layer violation and talk directly to the underlying POSIX layer that we have in memory. And essentially, they will conflict with Windows locks. But what I'm trying to avoid is the situation where a client can lock a byte range by doing a POSIX lock and unlock it doing a Windows lock. I want that operation to be an error. So I'm going to be writing torture tests to make sure that that happens. Other thing that doesn't work right now is renaming of open files, and that's due to deny mode semantics and the fact that SIFS simply doesn't allow you to do that. Now, I have an idea of how to fix this. I'll talk a little bit more about that slightly later on in the talk. The other thing that, of course, we needed were POSIX-ACL compatibility, because despite the fact that Windows admins sort of look down on POSIX-ACLs, you know, oh, they're these primitive, useless things. Oops, I'll stop playing with the wire. They are actually extremely useful, and I think they're getting more use, at least in Linux environments, because they're now in the kernel. I remember talking with Ted Cho about them, and his comments to me were POSIX-ACLs were on the limit of admin, a limit of complexity for an administrator to understand. Any more complex than that, and you've gone into Windows world, and nobody really understands what's going on. You know, but the user group and world permissions are too primitive. So I personally, I'm a big fan of POSIX-ACLs, but so I really wanted to make sure that at least in a Linux to Samba world, where Samba supports POSIX-ACLs, you have a direct on-the-wire one-to-one mapping between the ACLs get and set. And we do have that now. So, obviously, Linux and Unix file systems are case-sensitive, and SIFS, by default, is case-insensitive. But there is a bit in one of the flags header, in the flags field in the protocol header, that says you can be case-insensitive or not. So, great, I thought, all I'll do is I'll just get Samba to obey that bit on a per SMB basis. You know, Unix clients will turn the bit off. Windows clients obviously will always set that bit. And then I started to sniff stuff. And Windows NT and above always sets their yes, we're case insensitive bit. But Windows 98, DOS, and anything below, they just kind of assume that, hey, we're always going to be case insensitive. So they just never bothered to set it. So this is where the ugly client auto-detect thing comes in. So I essentially got Steve to send me a particular new protocol variant called POSIX. I think it's POSIX 1.0. When I see that, I know I'm talking to a Unix client that really understands how case insensitivity and case sensitivity should work, and I believe the bit in the flags field. And the interesting thing is Windows 2000 actually also obeyed this bit. So you could talk to a Windows 2000 file SIFS server in case-sensitive mode by turning that bit off and sending SIFS calls. But unfortunately, that was far too useful for you know to allow Unix clients to work. So Microsoft removed that ability for Windows 2003, and you have to change a registry entry to turn the ability to have case-sensitive path names on and then reboot the server. And I think when you load services for Unix, the NFS server on Windows 2003, it actually does that. It makes that registry change automatically before you have to reboot to start the service. So, obviously, Unix extensions, we toyed for a second or two, but only a second or two, with returning SIDs for the owner and group of a file. And then we thought, no, that would be crazy. And so we just returned the UID, I think it's actually 64-bit, room for growth, 64-bit UID and GID. But of course, those are UIDs and GIDs that only have meaning on the Samba server, on the SIFS server. So of course, if you really want consistent users and groups across your clients and servers, you have to be running some kind of directory service, you know, NIS, some kind of LNAP server. We've had lots of directory services talks, very good ones. So, you know who to ask to setting that up. But one of the things that we might do, depending on time, depending on how important it is, at least for little embedded devices, it's rare that for little embedded devices that might be running, say, Linux and SIFS, it would be rare that those things would have a directory service set up also. So what you might want, and I'm still debating this, basically SIFS usually has a kitchen sink approach. I mean, you know, as you've very well noticed, you can do anything in SIFS. You can do printing, you can do name service lookup. Kitchen sink, everything is in there. You can do RPC calls. So, hey, what's adding another name service? Pretty easy, huh? So the idea might be, at least for ease of administration, if you've got a lot of Linux desktops talking to a Samba server, is rather than having to set up a name service switch going via... rather than going via a name service switch to LDAP, you might be able to do this via SIFS. And I think I have a slide later on talking about that. So character mapping. This is something that I was beaten severely with a rubber hose at the wine conference over. I finally seen the light. So the problem is there are some characters that are valid in Unix file, the file system, that are completely invalid for SIFS, and they are colon, less than, greater than, vertical bar, question mark, backslash, and star, the full set. And in fact, in our parsing routines that pull the names off the wire, we actually check for these and return different error codes. There's a whole function that takes care of this, because we got really anal about returning the right error codes, and so now, you know, if you have, you know, two stars in the wrong place, or we'll change error codes depending on exactly what bad path name you've sent us, and that's exactly what Windows 2003 does. So currently, services for Unix, which also has to support this problem, what they do is they do something really disgusting, which I was considering for a while, and SIFSFS can do this as well when it's talking to Windows servers, because of course those file names are invalid in a Windows NTFS system, is they map them into the user-defined area of the Unicode space by basically prefixing the ASCII character with FF, so it's like FF star. And that's what gets stored, and then it's mapped back into star when it does the NFS name lookup. And it doesn't support this, and I was going to add it until I got back from the conference, until the rubber hose incident. And after that, I realized that was really dumb, and the best thing to do is actually, if we're doing per-client detection, and I'm doing per-client detection on things like the case-insensitive bit, then why don't I just turn off the error codes returned when those names are passed in on the wire, and essentially just take the name that's passed in and say, okay, when I'm talking to a Unix client, this is a Unix name. And that's very simple. So I will fix that when I get back from this conference, just not in the way that I'm talking about it on the slide. And that will make far more sense. As I mentioned, ACL, GET and SET, POSIX ACLs have been added. And the nice thing about that is it took me about a day and a half to put them in, because we already have the infrastructure to do POSIX ACLs. So it's literally just a mapping on the wire, a linearization on the wire. And I tested it by adding the GET FACL code into SMB client. I didn't add SET FACL basically because I didn't want to write all the text parsing routines to parse the U colon whatever. So I'm hoping maybe to steal that code from someone else. I'm sorry? Oh, so apparently there are library calls, which I may be stealing in the future to add set FACL. And again, it uses UIDs and GIDs in the ACLs. It doesn't mix them up with SIDs. So how many people here remember Unix RFS? Thank you, John. Oh, and someone else. Yes, well, so there were only three SVR3 users out there. It wasn't very popular, was it? So this was a file system that was created by AT&T, and the idea was it was basically just a complete remoting of all the Windows file system calls. It was stateful. You could do things like you could mount dev directories and access remote tape drives on the remote server. You do all sorts of things with it, and it got absolutely annihilated by NFS, because NFS was an open standard and everyone could implement it. But the attributes of Unix to Unix SIFS are actually quite close to those of RFS. But it's kind of halfway, because we're still similar to NFS in that device files are still not remoted, and there are still client-side lookups for things like symlinks. Device files, again, aren't done on the server side. And you can do it via doing a single socket connection, or you can have multiple TCP connections. And I think Steve's client will do it both ways. It's depending on a proc entry. You can turn it into doing single TCP or multiple TCP. So, as mentioned there, Steve is doing the SIFSFS client for 2.6. And it's kind of being developed in concert with the Samba 3 code. Will be developed in concert with the Samba 4 code as we merge things, as we merge the development. So sometimes we do the client first, sometimes we do the server. We generally basically just steal the header file definitions from each other because it's all GPL code. And Steve tests with the SpecFS file system tools and some of the other, the standard Unix file system test tools. And apparently it passes all the POSIX file system tests right now, except for file locking. So that's the major missing piece. So I think there are people who've tested mounting home directories and running KDE with it. And many things work, including having Unix Unix sockets in a file system work when it's mounted from SIFS. But the problem is many of the KDE applications and other applications want to create file names with colons in them. So that's one of the things I talked about I have to fix. And so right now Steve is working on performance. But it's pretty damn reliable. I think in terms of the problems that people have with Linux NFS, I think this is going to be a better solution. I really do. I hope it's going to take off. So over at Apple, we have Conrad Minshall. So it's really quite funny at Connectathon and also the SIFS conference in San Jose, because usually I have Steve on one side, I'm in the middle, Conrad on the other, and they both beat me up about things they want in the server. And so Conrad is doing the Mac OS X SIFS client. And the issues with that is they test really mainly against Windows servers, which is a bit weird for me, because Apple do sell servers and they run Samba on them, but apparently that's not their primary test focus, because they know where their bread and butter is, and it's desktops. We're trying to improve that. Conrad actually doesn't live more than a mile from my house, and you know, I go around and have lunch at the Apple campus occasionally. So, you know, we should be working together better than we are. But Apple are notoriously secretive and cheap, so they haven't given me any free hardware to test things. So I'm still holding out for that. Right now, they're choosing Windows-style ICALs. So Mac OS, some future version of Mac OS X, will actually have Windows-style ICALs. Although what version they choose and what version they believe... My fear is that they will just download the MSN articles, MSDN articles, and just implement what's written there, which, of course, is only approximately what's really going on. So we'll end up with sort of four different ICALs. We'll end up with NFS v4 ICALs, Windows ICALs, Samba ICALs, and Mac OS X ICALs. So hopefully we'll get them to actually test against Windows servers and do it properly. They don't have any current plans to add POSIX ICALs, which I think is a shame. I think that's probably right for them, because they're selling to Windows people, and Windows people want to see Windows style ICALs. So I think the Linux market is somewhat different, because a lot of the Linux market is coming from Unix people who are used to seeing who actually will use ICALs rather than just sort of bring up the GUI once, play with a few things and say, wow, that's a cool feature, we must have that, and never use it again. They do publish the source code in Darwin for the SIFS-FS, for their SMBFS. I don't know how regularly the code drops go back, but the nice thing about that is it does mean that you can help fix bugs in it. They're just kind of outsiders somewhat for open source. They still haven't really got it. They kind of take more than they give, and I'm hoping that they'll change. Eric Rabin at HP, he's maintaining the Charity NFS to SIFS gateway, and it's proprietary code, although he's a member of the SIFS 9000 Samba SIFS server team, and so it's tested very, very closely with Samba. Again, he's in Cupertino, so it's kind of like a lot of the client developers are all there, so we can bug each other. They're very active participants in getting this stuff standardized. They can't, unfortunately, currently use the ACL extensions or extended attributes, because HP UX doesn't have those. It has POSIX ACLs, but not extended attributes. There's no EAs in NFS, obviously, so there's no way for his client to kind of get that information. And likewise, there's no standard POSIX ACL protocol in NFS. I think there's a Sun variant of it. And it's an HP UX-only solution. So, you know, it's very interesting to have out there. It's very useful to have another client to test against. But in terms of what you're going to see in the real world, it's probably not going to make much of an impact. Being as I've run over, or I'm taking too much time, where do we go from here? Because I'm sure you're all fed up and want to go home. First thing is fix the file name problem. You should be able to create files with colons and stars on a Unix file system. It's stupid that you can't, and it's all my fault. Secondly, POSIX file locking. So as I said, I'll have to split the layers up, work out how that fits pretty well into Samba 4, and we really want POSIX specs. We want to be able to run the most demanding POSIX locking test spec, and everything has to work. Because the whole point is this must be a complete Unix-to-Unix solution. No extended attribute support. That's another call that we can add in. So right now, we can get and set extended attributes, but we do it using the old DOS case-insensitive extended attributes. So there's no reason why we can't remote the Linux and IRIX XFS and EXT3 extended attribute interface so that you can basically get and set EAs. And that will be needed for SE Linux, I think. Problem is there's no standard in Linux for extended attributes. So, like I say, the ones that have EAs right now are Linux, IRIX, and FreeBSD, but I don't think they're available on any of the other Unixes. So getting out further along, we probably need to add a Unix open and make dir that have POSIX semantics, so they return the current mode T bits that you've just created. POSIX rename and unlink with POSIX semantics, so you can rename and unlink open files, and you can delete open files. And, you know, what do we do about share modes? Try not to tie this too closely to Linux. We really do want to try and make this something that anyone who's implementing a POSIX system can use to have a completely remoted file system. And then in talking to Andrew, his feeling, and I can't say that he's wrong on this, it's just it's pushing a little fast, is that basically we should say, screw this SIF stuff, essentially tunnel the Unix calls inside it and say we have open, we have read, we have write, we have create, you know, we have the complete Unix API and we return Unix error codes. We don't do this anti-status stuff, we just return, you know, eno access or whatever, the standard Unix error codes. But at what point is that not really SIFs? And should we really care about that? So it's to go out and say, right, we're just going to completely change everything. That's probably the right solution ultimately. And maybe we'll end up doing that by negotiating a completely new dialect, saying this is SIFS plus or whatever. And at that point, we just remap the entire space. We can do whatever we want, and we don't care because Microsoft is never going to negotiate that dialect. So essentially, we're just using the SIFS infrastructure to create a completely new file system protocol. But I'm a little timid about doing that, mainly because I get the feeling that I know I would really screw it up if we were just designing this on our own. Maybe if Andrew and others sit down and sort of design something, that might be a little safer. But I'm somewhat more timid. So right now I'm taking baby steps. I'm adding changes to the SIFS protocol that I know we can get away with to allow Conrad and Steve to keep a pretty similar client code base that will talk to both Windows and with a few modifications to Samba. Because essentially I think at the point where we do sort of hijack it and say, right, this is Unix SIFS, completely different dialect, you know, it should be a different kernel-side redirector. Because essentially it won't have any code in common with the SIF stuff anymore, and why should it care? So to map, to look up users, if you wanted to have a little device, or as I said, SIFs is a... That root slide probably should be further back. But this is some of the things that we could do. If you wanted to have a complete SIFs network and all the naming services, you know, the user and groups and the lookups were done over SIFS rather than having to have NIS or any LDAP or any other directory service. In other words, your clients don't have to find the directory server, only the servers need to know where that is. We could create a new RPC pipe called Unix NSS, which would be based on the Unix NSS interface and would allow, you know, the get PW NAM calls essentially to be remoted, tunneled under SIFS using DCE encapsulation defined as IDL, and allow a completely consistent namespace. So when you mount a server, you can essentially do, when you get a UID back, you can do a lookup on that UID from directly from that server via SIFS. And that also allows, you know, one authentication mechanism, Kerberos 5, to control access to all the name service lookups. So, you know, and obviously we wouldn't completely just steal the NSS interface, because there's obviously a lot of efficiencies you can do by doing multiple lookups. But this is, you know, this is further out. Encrypted SIFS. So my dream is to be able to say, right, we get a Kerberos ticket, we get a session key. Forget all this Microsoft stuff, we're just going to encrypt end-to-end. And at that point, we go to the US government and say, do we have a file system for you? And I'm sure they'll buy it, because, hey, they've got infinite amounts of money. So NFS v4 can do this, so we have to have it too if we're going to replace NFS. And this is actually not too difficult to do. We already have the entry points, which is where we do the SMB signing. We just have to decide how to do it right so that we don't mess it up cryptographically. So one of the things that I think is needed is the ability to rekey. So, because SIFS sessions can last a long time. I mean, you can basically log in, mount a drive, and leave it mounted for the rest of the year if the client and server are stable enough. So you really would like to, and I'm assuming that's a Samba server with a Linux client, by the way. But, so you want to be able to rekey the session key so you're not using the same session key for that whole long-lived session. And of course, you know, just like I don't trust us inventing a new file system protocol, I wouldn't trust us inventing a new security system either. So I would definitely want to get some security reviews from real paranoid crypto people. So if you imagine that we had that, an encrypted SIFS-to-SIFS transport, how would Windows clients participate? So one of the things, nobody wants to write new Windows redirector code, although it has been done. Someone I know has actually written a new Windows redirector using essentially the information in the IFS kit. It's just that he was extremely bright and worked for IBM Research, and unfortunately it's not open code. So again, you don't want to change code on the client, because imagine that somebody did this. Microsoft would make their life extremely difficult in the next service pack. So it would be a hack solution for people who really wanted to have, you know, let's say, encrypted SIFS. So one of the things that could be done, and this is an interesting way it's done right now, I believe the Vocker probably knows more about this than I, but I believe the Windows AFS client actually acts as a SIFS server locally. So the client sort of mounts a loopback mount to itself, which then translates it into the AFS calls. So essentially, you could do a SIFS-to-SIFS proxy that just does the encryption. So talking about embrace and extend, this is our vision for embracing and extending SIFS and doing to Microsoft what they've done to many other protocols. So this is our only chance to hijack it. So based on the reanimator theme, our only chance. So far from being the death of SIFS, it's probably still alive, and it's actually getting reanimated. The old corpse is getting off the slab and twitching around, and probably becoming more important in the future rather than less important. There was a time a few years ago when we kind of expected to sail gracefully off into the sunset with Samba because nobody would really care. But now it appears that we've turned the boat around and we're sailing aggressively back. And I think the SIFS protocol is becoming more important, not less. So that's the end of the talk. Does anyone have any questions, comments, or think I'm an idiot? Or please feel free. You're all bored and you want to go home. Oh, no, okay. There's always one. Sorry.
Sorry, I found this talk very interesting, so I don't want
to
go home
yet. No, please. I'm glad you did. At least I gave it for somebody. Everyone else could have gone, but I'm glad you were here.
Thank you. Could you please elaborate on this shift of perception of machine-to-machine trust to machine-to-user trust, especially in the light of mounting some general directory which you always want to have accessible and using that and having that being used by all the users? Like you do now with an NFS share.
Oh, okay. So I think I understand the question. It's like, okay, you want to mount a general directory and have it used by many different users who may have logged on to the client system. Well, essentially, Steve's client does support that so long as... So what it will do is it will do one TCP connection, and for each incoming user, it will do a separate session setup. and get a new virtual user ID. So it's not the case, although it's commonly the case that you mount your home directory on your local client and basically all processes in your system access the home directory as you. But the code is capable of doing multiple session setups. And so long as... I think... Andrew, have you been working... Oh, he may have gone. I think there is a helper that allows the... I don't think it's Kerberized yet, Steve's client. But the idea is that there will be an upcall helper from the SIFS client, which when a new user comes in, a process with a different user ID comes in, the SIFS redirector will upcall to a daemon that basically says, do I have a ticket? Do I have a Kerberos ticket for that user? And then would essentially do a separate session setup. And at that point, whenever that process is doing I/O, once the session setup is done, it will change to that user. And if you don't have a valid token, you won't get access. You'll get access denied when you try and CD into that directory or access it.
I see. I'm asking on the background of running a very extensive NFS root setup at home.
Mm-hmm.
No hard disks in the living room.
Uh-huh.
So that would be one issue. And the question is, will there be any kind of low security SIFS solution for Unix to Unix?
So when you're saying a low solution?
Low security solution.
NFS
is a low security solution,
obviously. Oh, well, the low security solution is essentially to just export it as guest and, you know, and do a forced user, and have Samba do a forced user to root. And then export slash. Very small smb.conf, and any client will be able to do anything, I guarantee it. So, yes, if you want to turn off security, that's not a problem. And everyone will access as the same user, and they'll all be root. So, yes, that one's easy. Yeah, okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, big applause.
Okay, thank you. Oh, thank you.